Hello, friends. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. I want to thank everyone so much for listening today. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. I want to thank everyone so much for listening today and for making Out of This World Radio one of the most popular talk shows here in the Seattle area and the fastest growing metaphysical and spiritual radio program in the world with over 100,000 listeners in over 60 countries. We have an incredible, really incredible show for you today with some really important messages. During the first hour from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I'll be interviewing a wonderful gentleman named Courtney Brown. Courtney is one of the world's most famous and well-known remote viewers. He's published articles on books on Martin Luther King, The Phoenix Lights, which was a show of UFOs across Phoenix back in 1997, Aliens on Iapetus, which is a moon orbiting Jupiter, Remote Viewing Sedona, which is a statue, a humanoid statue on Mars. He also has remote viewed 9/11, the Great Pyramids of Giza, and written what he calls the true story of what happened in Atlantis. His interview should be really out of this world, and he'll be coming on in just a few minutes from the Farsight Institute in Atlanta, Georgia. From 3 p.m. to 4 p.m., I'll be interviewing another wonderful gentleman named Master Lin from Taiwan. Master Lin is a wonderful man, greatly admired throughout Asia and the world for his profound spiritual insights and charitable activities, and I'm so happy that he'll be on today during the second hour. Master Lin has written numerous books, including Communication with the Mind, Listen to the Voice of Little Souls, Children, We Never Die, I Am an Alien, and other wonderful books. In March of 2017, I was very fortunate to have Master Lin give a keynote speech at my Galactic Wisdom Conference in Olympia, Washington, here in the United States. I want to thank everyone so much for the support of this radio program, because Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. I really appreciate your support, because I know together we can and will create a much better and happier world. And with that, I want to thank my dear friends Faison and Shirley in Florida, Anita in Dublin, Ireland, Marku in Helsinki, Finland, Emma Louise and Jan Erik in Norway, Randy and Jessica in Mercer Island, Washington, my good friend Darren in Olympia, Washington, Raj Shastri in beautiful Toronto, Canada, and everyone around the world who've helped me raise consciousness and make this planet a better place. I'd also like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including the wonderful Crystal Voyage Bookstore in Tacoma, which is, I think, one of the best spiritual centers in the state of Washington, and the wonderful Orion Tech Computers of Bend, Oregon. We're also looking for sponsors and advertisers for the show, and any advertising on this program will have a worldwide audience for your goods and services. With that, I'd like to thank my dear friend Carol's designing my website and providing wonderful support, and my friends at the Emoto office in Tokyo, Japan, as well as my friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting my show, and I know they're listening today, my angelic and earthly family, and KKNW, without whose help and support this program would not be possible. I'd also like to thank Brooke Adams from Los Angeles, who've been suggesting new wonderful guests for the program. I also have a spiritual mentoring program where I teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides. If you'd like to get in touch with your loved ones who've passed on, please call me at area code 509-750-9793 in the United States, or toll free at 1-888-879-8339 in the United States and Canada. You can also email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. With that, I believe in the power of prayer, and I'd like to ask everyone listening today to send lots of love and light to Michiko Hayashi's mother, Masako, who suffered a stroke recently, and I want to tell you that your love and prayers have really helped her. I'd also like to ask everyone to send lots of love and light to my good friend, Orion, who was diagnosed with stage 4 throat cancer a few months ago, and he's getting much better. His tumor's shrinking, and I attribute that to all your wonderful prayers and love and light you've been sending them. So please keep doing that. I'd also like to ask that you send some love and light to my friend Marco's mother, Louisa, who had a stroke recently, my friend Wally in the Elm area, as well as Dr. William Mout, a wonderful filmmaker in the Tacoma area. My book on Messages from the Masters, Cosmic Messages from Professor Albert Einstein, President Kennedy, Senator Kennedy, Nostradamus, Mahatma Gandhi, and Dr. Emoto, as well as the Galactic Alliance, is done. It's almost ready to be published. I'll let you know as soon as it's out and available. The book, it will all be all about humanity's bright beautiful future with messages from these beautiful masters. I want to thank everyone so much for their support for my recent Galactic Wisdom Conference that was held in Olympia, Washington, here in the United States earlier this in March. Because of this success, it was a very successful conference, I'll be having my fourth annual Galactic Wisdom Conference on March 9th, 10th, and 11th, 2018, at the same location at 9101 Steilacoom Road in Olympia, about an hour south of the Seattle airport. For more information, please see our website at www.galacticwisdomconference.com. Among other speakers, we'll be having Simon Parks, who will be giving a presentation next year, as well as Michiko Hayashi from the Emoto office, and other wonderful psychics coming in from worldwide. I have a new television program called Out of This World TV. And yesterday, while I was doing a TV interview with Judy Kelly from Los Angeles, I had an amazing experience where all these beautiful spirits came in, including Abraham Lincoln, President Kennedy, Albert Einstein, Dr. Masaru Emoto, Mother Mary, George Washington, Jesus, Ananda Yogananda, Mahatma Gandhi, a clown named Chuckles, and a rainbow-colored fairy named Sprinkles. and they all came in with some wonderful messages for humanity. And in honor of Independence Day, I need to give my producer a little advance notice. It's been a busy day. But, Eric, when you get a chance, could you please play the John F. Kennedy astronaut speech? It's about 30, 35 seconds. I'll give him a minute to find that. But he wanted me to play it today in honor of our Independence Day, which was just a few days ago. And with the messages that I have, Mother Mary said that love always displaces fear and hate. George Washington said that we must look at the world through glasses of love and to pray for our president and for the highest good of the world. And in that regard, President Kennedy said that even if you don't like our new president, to please send him lots of good wishes and positive thoughts so he and the government can help make the world a better place. Dr. Emoto's message was that to always choose your words, thoughts, and deeds very carefully, because the words that you use and the thoughts that you have always reverberate throughout every cell in your body. And they all said to listen to the truth of your heart. That interview that I had, which was very profound yesterday, I'll be playing that a week from today from the 3 o'clock to 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time hour, and I hope you can all listen to that. It's a really amazing interview that all these spirits came in. I wasn't prepared for it, but they have lots of messages to tell you. Also next week, during the 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. hour Pacific Standard Time, I'll be interviewing the famous water scientist, Professor Jerry Pollack of the University of Washington here in Seattle. With that, what I'd like to do is to go ahead and, Eric, go ahead and play the astronaut speech from President Kennedy. I'm playing this at his request today.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for the freedom of man.
I had an amazing conversation with Jack Kennedy yesterday with the help of with another psychic, Judy Kelly, out of the Los Angeles area on my television show. And President Kennedy said that we need to send good wishes and good thoughts to our new president. And I'll be going more into that. Even if you disagree with him, he said that it's important to do that. I have another very important announcement to make with that, with respect to that, in just a few minutes. Anyway, Professor Pollack is one of the world's most famous water scientists. On my interview with him next week, we'll be talking about what he calls the fourth phase of water and how it can be used for memory storage. This storage, he said in his interview, can be used to build organic computers based on H2O3 or H3O2 water molecules. And the implications for the entire world is totally staggering. I had a guest named Matias Di Stefano on my show last year. He's from Argentina. He has vivid memories of his life in Atlanta, at Atlantis. And during the Atlantean times, they had organic computers based upon structured water used as memory devices. He said this is the reason why no written records of Atlantis have been found, because the water was used as a memory device during that time. I hope you'll all be able to listen to this incredible interview next week. Briefly, I'd like to mention some upcoming events. From the August 18th to August 21st, I'll be in the Dominican Republic speaking at a wonderful conference called the Peace and Light Conference. It'll have some of the best world's best psychics and healers, and I'm very pleased to tell you that I'll be there as well giving a presentation. Their website is www.paxluxmundi.com, and I hope you can all come to this fantastic event. Then from September 7th through the 12th, just a couple 2 months from now, I'll be sponsoring another trip to Mount Shasta, Telos, and the Hollow Earth. I went to Mount Shasta here about 2 weeks ago, and it was an incredible experience. At least six or seven, eight of us actually went into Telos, and several of the Telosians followed me back here. They're with me now, actually, and they've been helping me with my spiritual guidance, and I want to thank them so much for their support. We'll be going back again in September, and there are certain spiritual protocols you have to follow, including not eating any meat. If you are interested for a really out-of-this-world experience, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or again, you can call me here in the United States at 509-750-9793. I will be limiting it to a small group, so first come, first serve, and I hope you can all come. And finally, just before I put on my wonderful guest, Courtney, from the Farsight Institute, I want to make an important announcement. I received a message while I was at Mount Shasta recently from the Hollow Earth that the chemtrails have been finally stopped by the Galactic Alliance. That's correct. And when I was at Shasta, Mount Shasta seems to be one of the favorite places for dumping chemtrails by the government, by the U.S. government. But I looked up in the sky, and when we were there for 5 days, we didn't see one chemtrail. And so I asked my friends in the Hollow Earth what was going on. And I also checked with my friends in the Galactic Alliance. And I was told, 2 years ago, I was told by my friend Ambassador Torellian of the Galactic Alliance that it would be at least about 2 years before they were able to stop it. And now it's happened. Isolated incidences of some spraying left, but for the majority, 90-95% of the spraying has been stopped. And I will be having a program on that very soon. And with that, I'd like to play, Eric, if we could play Happy Days or Here Again briefly, and then we'll go to Courtney in Atlanta.
Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here. Together, shout it now. There's no one who can doubt it now. So let's tell the world all about it now. Happy days are here again. Your cares and troubles are gone. There'll be no more from now on. Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again. So long, sad times. So long, bad times. We are rid of you at last. Howdy, gay times. Cloudy, gray times. You are now a thing of the past.
Happy days are here again, the skies above are clear.
Okay, I wanted to play this song because happy days are in fact here again because the chemtrails have been stopped. I'll repeat that again. The chemtrails have been stopped, according to my friends in the Hollow Earth. I will be having a show on this in a couple of weeks with entities from the Hollow Earth for more information. But I would love your comments. If you do see chemtrails being sprayed in your area, please contact me. But they are mostly it's been stopped. That's what I've been told. And this is particularly relevant around the Mount Shasta, California area because the spraying has been so bad by the U.S. Air Force that many trees are dying. It's full of aluminum, barium. Of course, this is completely illegal. It's in violating so many environmental laws. But finally, it stopped, completely stopped. We didn't see any chemtrail spraying at all when I was there just 2 weeks ago. And my friends, happy days are here again. So I just wanted to let you all know that. I will be having a follow-up program on that in a few weeks. And with that, I'd like to bring my wonderful friend, Courtney Brown. He is one of the world's most famous and well-known remote viewers. And I'm so happy to have him on the show today. He also has another remote viewer on with him named Princess. And Courtney and Princess, welcome to Out of This World Radio. I'm so happy you're here today.
Hey, I'm so glad to be here as well.
Thank you. Me too.
Now, let me correct you a little bit, Ted, right in the beginning. At Farsight, at farsight.org, right. F-A-R-S-I-G-H-T.org, O-R-G, we're a nonprofit.
Okay.
I am the front man. I am the CEO. I am the guy who designs the projects, but I do not do the remote viewing.
Oh, my apologies.
So don't call me a remote viewer. I'm okay. The guy who designs the projects. See, the remote viewing has to be done totally blind,
okay.
Using procedures that were originally, that are derivative of those that were developed by the United States military and used to this day, in fact, for espionage purposes. But we use them for civilian science projects. And the procedures have developed enormously in different directions as we've done our research. But someone's got to design the projects, and someone has to assign the remote viewing to be done. So someone has to know what's going on behind the scenes,
sure.
And that person cannot simultaneously do remote viewing. So Princess Janae is one of our premier remote viewers. We also have Melina Hall. We have Aziz Brown. We have Dick Allgaier and Daz Smith. All on different areas of the planet. Aziz does his work from Thailand, Bangkok. Dick Allgaier is in Hawaii. Daz Smith is in UK. And Princess Janae is in North Carolina. Melina Hall is here in Atlanta. So, people are scattered all over the place. But this is the best collection of remote viewers on the planet, anywhere bar none. And we're the only venue for these full public projects involving remote viewing, so people can see the data, see the verification of the data collection process, see that it was correct. There's no secrets. Everything's open. And we have enormous numbers of materials that are available on YouTube, for example. So as well as things that we sell through Vimeo and Amazon DVDs and so on. But 95% of everything we do is for free on the internet and on mostly YouTube and our website. But anyway, Princess is one of the premier remote viewers. And she went through a 9-month training course of over 400 hours. That's twice a week,
wow.
For 8 to 9 hours a day, one-on-one training without a break for 9 months straight.
My goodness.
That's significantly more than a full-time college student would have in classroom time.
Wow.
And then there's a maturing process also as she gets more involved with the projects that we do. So she's had an enormous amount of experience as well in doing these projects, especially our Time Cross project, which is a very exciting project that we're doing these days. Anyway, so that's why she's here. If I was also a remote viewer, she wouldn't be here. So she gives you the remote viewing side, and I tell you how these projects are managed.
Well, I apologize for my faux pas, Courtney,
no,
but
okay.
I have a lot of respect for you and your work, and I'm so glad to have you both on today. It's really quite an honor. You've done some incredible work. You remote viewed Sedona on Mars, which is a humanoid face on Mars, some say. You remote viewed 9/11. I think the last time you were on my show, I can't remember, maybe it's been too long, maybe 2 years or so. You talked about what was really happening at 9/11. You've also done the Great Pyramids of Giza and the true story of Atlantis. And I remember you mentioned in some of, I looked on your website, and I remember you talked about the underneath in the Atlantic, I think, believe it's around, not sure, mid-Atlantic, South Atlantic, you had discovered the civilization underneath the ocean that looked like it had been completely covered up by the water. And with that...
Actually, that was the Atlantis project, and Princess,
okay.
In fact, was the primary, was one of the primary viewers for that project. And that was an anomaly that was on the bottom of the ocean, now that is 1,000 miles west of Morocco,
right.
In Portugal,
mm-hmm.
3 miles deep.
Wow.
And Europe used to extend at least that far, because that used to be a city on the surface.
Wow.
And about 70,000, 80,000 years ago, it sunk. And it sunk because there was a drilling operation, mm-hmm. that was going taking place on the other side of the planet,
mm-hmm.
or near what we now know as New Zealand. That's the thinnest crust on the planet and also the largest concentration of lava rock. Mm-hmm. And it blew out the balloon. You see, the planet is a balloon of liquid molten rock with a thin crust, an 8-mile thin crust.
Wow.
And they were trying to drill through the crust, and they thought they could control it. They couldn't. It wasn't like a volcano. It was more like one quarter of the planet just sort of popped. And whenever you have something like that, you have a dent on the antipode. The antipode is the opposite side of the planet, and that's where that anomaly was in the Atlantic, and that sunk when the other side down near New Zealand blew out.
Wow.
And that ended, and now there's a lot of other scientific evidence of that, and that is that there's a juggernaut in our sort of neurological genetic basis where they know that about 70,000 years ago there was a huge volcanic explosion in that area of the planet, and it killed off every single person on the planet except for about 2,000 to 6,000 surviving pairs of people.
Wow.
That means every single person that's on the planet today, whether you're Aborigine, Caucasian, African, Asian, no matter what, we're all related genetically to the same 2,000 to 6,000 pairs of people that survived that explosion. That's not in dispute. That is not in dispute in mainstream scientific circles. The question is, mm-hmm. was it just a volcano or was it something else? And mm-hmm. our Atlantis project covers what it actually was.
Well, I'd love to ask you some questions with that regard. I had a gentleman named Matthias Di Stefano on my show last year. He's from Argentina. He's only about 29 years old, but he's a brilliant young man. And he has vivid memories, detailed memories, of what life was like during the Atlantean period. And he came forth with some incredible things, statements, including he asked me, do you know why you haven't been able to find any written records of Atlantis? And I said, no. He said, that's because they used organic computers based upon what Professor Pollock calls structured water or fourth phase water, where there's an extra added oxygen molecule to the water molecules, and they use that as memory storage devices for the civilization. And I said to him, I asked him, in theory then, if you took the salt water, the water off the ocean that's in the Atlantic today, you should be able to access it. He said, in theory, that's true. But he also said it because of the destruction of Atlantis, it's like a library that where all the books are scattered everywhere and the pages are scattered everywhere. You'd have to put that together. But I'm just curious, Princess and Courtney, in your project examining the Atlantean civilization, did you look at their computer system, organic computers, or record-keeping back then?
Well, let me say, we can't really comment on what other people say about the things that you're talking about with this other person, because as far as we're concerned, that's hearsay, it's anecdotal, and it's also not what we do. We don't know if the guy's fantasizing or if the guy's real. I mean, just because he had these memories doesn't mean they're real memories. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we do all of our work under controlled conditions where the viewer is totally blind, and they have to recreate under totally blind conditions, all alone, solo, with no one in the room. Mm-hmm. They have to recreate what we know is verifiable. Mm-hmm. So we have ruins underneath the ocean, and Princess has to find them underneath the ocean, describe them underneath the ocean, and then describe everything we see in the Google Earth images, and then to move back in time. But in order to believe the stuff that back in time, you have to first get the stuff that we see that's verifiable correct. So you have to have a foothold on the verifiable before we even believe our own remote viewing stuff.
Sure.
So if you're asking us about somebody who just said they had these memories, that's way beyond the realm of
I couldn't resist
stuff that we can talk about.
But
Princess
resist.
Was in that project, and she did have she can talk to you about what the kind of civilization it was. Princess, do you remember that? That was quite a while back. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do remember that. I believe he was about to ask us a question.
Go ahead.
I'd love to if you could share your findings with my listeners around the world on what you found out about Atlantis. That would be incredible.
Yes, well, actually, I'm somebody who never really knew about Atlantis. So when I was going in, you know, of course we've seen cartoons and we've heard stories, but, you know, we don't really know what's real and what isn't. So when I was going into this, I know I couldn't understand why I couldn't see stars. I couldn't understand where I was, and until I went and I felt, and I'm like, well, how can I be underwater? This doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. and so I eventually started to see the grids and the planes and the I started to see, like, I guess tunnels of some sort, or
mm-hmm.
and I'm remembering this was definitely a while ago, so I'm actually going back into my memory now to remember this, but
mm-hmm.
I started to see, like, what looked like caves, what looked like it had, like, rooms. You could see the places. You could see where there was once civilization at one point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, like, what could have been their houses, or what could have been where people met, or what could have been where people slept. You could actually see those caves when I went into my remote viewing back in the past. And I know when I was looking into the present, you know, what we can see now from Google Earth,
mm-hmm.
I was seeing the land, just the flat land, the grid marks, the box, like, what is it called?
Corners.
Yeah, that. you know, just kind of like a place, like what you would see when you're looking on a map of a road. You could see those things.
Right.
Now, the entire anomaly is like one quarter the size of Portugal.
My goodness.
So, it sort of looks like an urban area with, mm-hmm. you know, like streets that you'd have downtown New York with all the grid mm-hmm. marks for the streets and the blocks.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, but it's extremely big.
Wow.
So this is a living area. And we also covered an area down near Antarctica, which was a scientific facility that was actually in charge of the drawing of the drilling operation. And there again is very clear marks on Google Earth, just, you know, a grid marks on Google Earth. And we were trying to figure out what those things are. When we finally, when we looked at that, it was very clear that those things were not artifacts of, like, the scanning techniques for the bottom of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the mainstream scientists like to say those are ship tracks. Ship tracks are where the sonar boats go over an area and they put the sonar down, and they're supposed to go back and forth in overlapping paths so that you get a smooth area that's covered, and you get all the topography correct that's down below. And if they don't do overlapping paths, you get what's a ship track, which is basically like a road that's out that a clear blue sea. I mean, it's just off by itself. And right underneath the ship is very clear
mm-hmm.
imagery. And then it's like train tracks, like right in the middle of the train tracks is very clear, and off to the sides is fuzzy. But ship tracks have a very defined, very definite look to them.
Mm-hmm.
And what we see at the bottom of the Atlantic doesn't come anywhere close to being what ship tracks look like, despite what mainstream oceanographers say. They,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you can look at ship tracks and you can clearly see this anomaly was real. And when they tried to revise it later on
mm-hmm.
with Google Earth 2.0, which came out about the same time as our Atlantis project came out with, they got rid of most of it, but you can still see it. What they did is apply extremely high compression algorithms to smooth out the grid.
Oh, no.
Mm. Which, you can't do that. But they did that anyway.
Right.
And so they said that the grid shouldn't be there. So they just, if you apply extreme high compression algorithms to any picture, you can make it flat. So you can have a picture of your mother-in-law and it looks perfectly good. If you apply compression algorithms on enough, you can make that mother-in-law look like a gray sheet of paper.
Sure.
So, you know, and that's basically what they did. And the grid marks still come through, even with the new Google Earth, but they're not so glaringly obvious as the first one, and that's the purpose. That was the purpose of the whole thing. And also, these are governmental data. So the oceanographers are basically working off governmental data, and governments can do anything they want with data before
sure.
the oceanographers get their hands on it. So
sure.
anyway, that's our take on it. I do want to mention, Ted, that project was quite a while ago, but that's a free project that's available on our website at farsight.org, F-A-R-S-I-G-H-T. Mm-hmm. But we recently came out with a number of other ones, including the Area 51.
Oh.
Which, that just came out a couple of weeks ago, which is the only full-blown project of what's underneath Area 51.
Well,
and if you ever wondered where some of the ETs are, they are deep under Area 51. So that's really a very interesting, that's very, very interesting projects. And so we also did the Roswell UFO crash that came out in February.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a fascinating big one. We also did Martin Luther King, and actually Princess was one of the ones that was the remote viewer for Martin Luther King, his I Have a Dream speech, as well as his assassination.
Mm-hmm.
We did The Psychology of Adolf Hitler, the JFK assassination, the Phoenix Lights, an alien resort facility on Iapetus, believe it or not, all of which are backed up by very clear photographs.
Sure.
And we did Cydonia Mars, and of course you already mentioned the 9/11 project. But the more recent ones, Area 51 is a big one that's out right now. A lot of people are talking about it. And the Roswell UFO crash as well, that was big. I just came back from Roswell, New Mexico, where I was speaking at the 70th anniversary of the Roswell UFO crash. Roswell is a town that exists because of the UFO crash.
Wow.
I mean, its whole persona is based on that event. So anyway, that's that's interesting.
Well,
anyway, yeah.
Well, I have to ask you in this is kind of a joke, but in 25 words or less, could you explain, tell a little bit about your findings in Area 51? You don't have to worry about 25 words, but just briefly.
Sure. No, yeah. Area 51, that was a project that featured Aziz Brown, Daz Smith, and Dick Allgaier.
Mm-hmm.
And they were done under totally blind conditions, and Aziz Brown was in Thailand, Daz Smith was in the UK, and Dick Allgaier was in Hawaii. There was no communication whatsoever with them, no matter what. And they all just got an email saying there is a target, remote view it, end of story, and they all sent in. They all got the correct desert environment.
Mm-hmm.
They all got the surface areas. They all got the Groom Lake, the runways on the surface. And they all got this elevator shaft, this huge elevator shaft that goes mm-hmm. down.
Mm-hmm.
And they all got the multiple levels, and they all got advanced aerial craft underneath the inside some of the rooms down there. It's a huge facility down below.
Mm-hmm.
And both Dick Alg and also our alien artifacts, spacecraft that are in various states of repair and disrepair.
Mm-hmm.
And they all, and Dick Allgaier and Aziz Brown clearly saw what we can, for lack of a better word, called very, very, very large reptilian extraterrestrials.
Okay.
There were no so-called grays or other that, but they were if you ever hear people say, "Where are the reptilians? Where are the reptilians? Ah, there's no reptilians. Where are the reptilians?" That's where they are.
Okay.
They're in, and as you go down the elevator shaft to deeper and deeper levels,
right,
you have fewer and fewer humans and more reptilians. The reptilians are deep down below. And they're quite threatening looking. They actually do have a strong smell to it, interestingly.
Mm-hmm.
And they definitely did not like the fact that we were remote viewing them. Humans cannot tell, no matter what you or anybody else tells you, that they can tell when they're being remote viewed. It's crap. They cannot.
Mm-hmm.
However, ETs can, and reptilians are among those that can. They have clear telepathic abilities. And when you actually are at a site, ETs actually turn in your direction and look right at where that remote viewer is. And the reptilians were very clear. They saw, in particular, they saw Aziz. Aziz's session is the last session in the study. And they saw him, and this guy that was running this like genetic lab just ran up and blocked. And Aziz did various movements to move around, and the guy just found him again, blocked. They wanted it not to be seen. So they're sort of hostile, sort of unfriendly. And apparently they work very closely with the U.S. government in that facility.
Right.
So that's the big secret of Area 51. It's not just alien spacecraft.
Right.
As you go further down, you start running into one or two reptilians. And as you go further down, that's all there are down there. So that's what's underneath Area 51. And that's why the secrecy is big. You know, the thing about the Area 51 thing, it's not mm-hmm. so much that there are reptilians down there. It's that there's an arrangement between the U.S. government and the reptilians.
Right.
And the real thing is we have to ask, is that appropriate? Meaning, They may be helping us with technology.
Good question.
But what groups are we not interacting with?
True.
In exchange for what seems to be an exclusive relationship in that facility with that one group.
Right.
So these are humanity questions that I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing that we're interacting with that group. I'm just saying that these questions really should go beyond just a military or very select. When you talk about the need, when you talk about a secret, secrets are need to know, meaning you have a need to know before you can hear it. Well, humanity really needs to know that particular question.
I agree.
Because its implications are broader. Anyway, that's what we found in that. For whether it's correct or not correct, that's what we found. And we have everything is recorded live on video. And as Princess can tell you, all the sessions that we do, they're recorded totally blind, solo, and live on video.
Sure.
And when you see all three remote viewers coming in with the same stuff, it's pretty amazing just in and of itself.
Well, I know the reptilians view humans as chicken or beef. They look at us as a food source, among other things. Also DNA, too. You mentioned that you went down to a genetic lab, and that's interesting because they like to fiddle with genetics, and some of my psychic friends have said that Monsanto, which of course specializes in GMO food and corn, is derives its technology from the reptilians because the reptilians are master geneticists.
Now, Ted, I have to say here, remember, we can only speak about what we've got with remote viewing.
So I know.
Everything you're talking about is on your side. For our side, it's hearsay. We don't know if it's true or not. All we know is that there are very tall beings that have a very rough skin and a smell, an interesting smell, down below, and they are extraterrestrial, and they're in Area 51. And as you go down the elevator further and further and further, you find more and more of them.
Right.
So if you go down a little while, to the first few levels, they're all humans.
Mm-hmm.
You go down even further, you'll run into one or two reptilians. You go down further and further, there's no humans and all reptilians.
Wow.
And they're all connected, though, in the same facility.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. To change gears a little bit, I've always been interested. I hope you don't mind me switching gears here. But
please.
I've always been interested in Martin Luther King. I think he was a great man. I think that there was a conspiracy behind his assassination. And I'd love to hear your findings from that project.
That's actually a really important project. And Princess was the person who did that project. So she did the I Have a Dream speech as well as the assassination itself.
Okay.
And it was, according to the data, it was certainly not a lone gunman. Princess, why don't you talk?
It definitely was a shock to me. Again, going in blind, I had no idea that I was even remote viewing Martin Luther King. I'm sitting here trying to figure out, you know, I found out what type of person he was and, you know, how caring he was, how much he wanted to really change this country and the things that were happening around him. And again, not knowing that I'm remote viewing Martin Luther King, it was a big deal to try to figure out who is this person? Like, Courtney, what am I doing? You know? And so I eventually, you know, I did the I Have a Dream speech. I saw who he was, and that's how I got connected to the target. And then I started going deeper into his assassination, and I started seeing that it was like a leveled thing, that it wasn't a one-person thing. And if it was that one person, it wasn't the one they said it was. However, it was a single soldier or person who had military experience. That somebody sent in, and you could see the chain of command going up. And I believe if I had continued to remote view him, that I probably would have found more and more on the chain of command. But I definitely could see, about five people who were in charge of the situation that seemed very CIA-like in a sense, very secretive.
Okay.
In a held off place, you know, a bandit type place, you know, a place where they were just with a lot of floors, a lot of buildings, and it had a lot of, I guess, technology or whatnot.
Right.
But they definitely sent someone who sent someone. There were messengers, there were bodyguards, there were people who were completely involved in this. I do believe it was government because, mm-hmm. you know, of course, who wants somebody to make that big of a difference in right. the country?
Right.
And, you know, you got to stop it now. And as a lot of the great leaders or people that we've seen, it got stopped. And sure. you can tell that there was a, you know, it wasn't true on the way that it was stopped. There was always something behind it.
Well, I've always suspected that, and I want to thank you so much for your wonderful project.
Actually, Ted, I might also add, yeah? if you actually watch the project, there's a, what she's giving you is sort of a real brief overview.
Mm-hmm.
It's a full movie, and it has incredible detail as to the different people in the team, who was the, what you call the boss man, the guy in charge,
right.
How he communicated with. And then there was the boss man, or the high boss
the,
man.
The boss boss, the big boss man.
The big boss okay. man, yeah. And, uh-huh. and she described them. He was the big boss man, was the guy in a suit, and there was a muscle guy that sort of looked Sylvester Stallone-ish.
Yeah.
Really good descriptions of the individual people. And then, of course, there was the shooter himself. Mm-hmm. And that shooter was really good.
Yeah, he was definitely military trained. He was definitely, like, one shot, you know, like he wouldn't miss a shot for anything. I could definitely see that and feel that in that person. He was not a nice person.
I see. Yeah.
Going into his, who he is as a person, I could yeah. feel his energy was just very, like, rude and cruel and death. You could see that that was on his mind, and uh-huh. I want to kill this man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, yeah. if she had gone into that project further, she could have gone up there. But you know, there's a lot of stuff she got. I mean, it's a tremendous amount of stuff. But she could have. Clearly, somebody somewhere sent some high-level bureaucrat type guy to this location that she describes very well, where they met with the messenger type guy, the Sylvester Stallone type guy, and sort of set out. Now, of course, you know I'm not talking about the actual Sylvester Stallone. I'm just talking about a guy that had muscles.
Right.
And so they sent out somebody to meet with the guy in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And if we've gone further up and up the chain of command, you know, the guy who actually sent the bureaucrat type guy to meet with the team, the team of five people met by themselves, but the bureaucrat guy met with their leader.
Mm.
And so the bureaucrat guy did not meet with all five people.
Mm-hmm.
He met with the one guy. And that's the muscle guy that I'm talking about, like the Sylvester Stallone type of person. When I say Sylvester Stallone, I'm just talking about a guy with bulky muscles.
He could make you an offer you couldn't refuse.
Yeah, well, you know, he would meet. So the bureaucrat guy met with that guy, and that guy went and met with the five team members.
Mm-hmm.
And they all did their stuff. That was so it's that organization that she described so clearly.
Oh, I see.
And then she said, and then the shooter guy was assigned to actually do the shooting, but the shooter guy was sort of separate.
Yeah, he wasn't a part of. He wasn't a part of the organization. He was a separate shooter that somebody came and got. I guess they tracked him down, Suicide Squad type.
Yeah.
And you see, that's important because if the shooter is caught, you don't want the shooter to be able to identify the five people in the team.
Yeah, that's
so you can't have the shooter actually knowing any identities.
Right. Right.
And so that shooter guy was sort of kept it separate from the team, but the team was the one who sort of organized it, got all the logistics and everything. It's fascinating. And she got all that detail. And then she described, you know, who the guy was, the black male that was, and he was surrounded by his friends in suits around him. And she
protectors.
Also went into his mind. I'm sorry?
I called them his protectors.
His protectors.
Well, I would,
you know, Andy Young and all the other people, Jesse Jackson and so on.
Yeah.
And then also when she did the I Have a Dream speech, she went into his mind to get an idea.
Right.
It was so great. In the movie, you actually see him saying, I like this guy. This is a nice guy. He's a very friendly person.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so you get her sort of, she was probably the first remote viewer of great competence.
Wow.
Who actually went into the mind under totally blind conditions of Luther King, and it was recorded on video.
I would love to watch those videos this weekend or sometime soon. That sounds so fascinating, the work you do. I wanted to ask you, you talked about a CIA-like government chain of command, and you also did, is that, if I'm mistaken, you also did something on the JFK assassination as well?
Yeah, now when we're talking, when she said the CIA, that's not mentioned, that doesn't mean the CIA.
Right, I know CIA-like.
That some intelligence sort of related group.
Sure.
Now you have to understand, U.S. intelligence, whether it's FBI, CIA, or NSA, or whatever, it's not monolithic and it's fragmented, it's balkanized.
Mm-hmm.
U.S. intelligence has many different sections,
right,
and they don't all communicate with one another.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, for example, there's a CIA, but the CIA, a lot of people in deep intelligence consider the CIA sort of like the post office. You know, you can actually walk down what building they're in, you can walk down the halls. I mean,
mm-hmm.
And so like people in the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, sort of look as the CIA as sometimes of the sort of the public venue.
Interesting.
So, you know, and they have all types of sub compartmentalized stuff. It's a
sure. Sure. I understand.
So when you say military, when you say intelligence,
yeah,
it's a very complicated.
Right.
Group of right. organizations. It's not a single one.
Sure. I was wondering if you might want to share something on the JFK assassination.
Well, that was a very interesting project. It involved Daz Smith and Dick Allgaier. Those are the two remote viewers for that.
Mm-hmm.
The remote viewing data clearly indicate that it was an inside job and that there is no indication from the remote viewing data that Lee Harvey Oswald had anything to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
The basic idea is that there were apparently three teams of three people each,
mm-hmm.
and they triangulated, and that explains why. And two of those teams had shooters that actually took shots. Mm-hmm. That explains the Magruder film.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry, the Zapruder film.
Right.
That clearly shows his head being jerked around in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
Now the scientists, the academics, they said no, that was our muscle spasms. They said that without any evidence whatsoever,
sure,
that muscle spasms can throw the neck backward like that. They just said that.
Right.
The point is, you can get academics to say almost anything you want.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they can come up with plausible reasons. They're academics, for gosh sakes. They know
right.
how to use words well.
Right.
But the reality is the Zapruder film doesn't look at all like muscle spasms. It looks like the shot came from one side and then a shot came from another side.
Sure.
And the remote viewing data seems to support that interpretation,
mm-hmm.
not the so-called muscle spasm interpretation. So I'm not saying that the muscle spasm academics are, I'm not saying they're liars or they're wrong or whatever. I'm just saying that the remote viewing data match what you see in the film. And in my opinion, what you see in the film is not at all a match to the so-called muscle spasm interpretation.
I was actually in Daily Plaza about 2 weeks ago, and I as a psychic, I go into the other side, and of course, this is a little different than, you know, it's a different feel, of course. But I talked to Jack Kennedy when I was there, and I saw the grassy knoll, and it was quite a day I spent there about. 2 weeks ago, last Sunday.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting thing. By the way, Daz Smith actually followed Jack Kennedy actually through the assassination into the after-death experience.
Mm-hmm.
In the session, it's very interesting. It's very interesting stuff how they did all that. Anyway, but the what is clear is the following, and our data match the facts on the ground in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
What is clear is that whoever shot Jack Kennedy was a great sharpshooter.
Right.
No matter what you say, whoever shot him from a long distance away,
mm-hmm.
perfect aim, sharpshooter, and it looks like it was from two directions. So even if you believe the Lee Harvey Oswald story, you have to buy into the idea that Lee Harvey Oswald was an incredible sharpshooter. And there is absolutely no indication in his background that he knew how to fire guns at that level. Secondly,
mm-hmm.
the gun that they say he used,
right.
the rifle that they said he used,
mm-hmm.
was recovered. And they clearly said this was the one that did it. It mm-hmm. was busted. Now, this is not in dispute. The sight that on the gun was broken. And the government's own forensic people could not even fix it when they tried to use shims.
Well,
now, Ted, this is what I ask you. Any marksman that is a great marksman,
mm-hmm.
what do you know? I don't use guns. I guess you don't use guns. But the point is, you know marksman.
Mm-hmm.
What do they, how do they treat their guns?
Like
they treat their guns better than the most beautiful woman in the world. I mean, they polish them. They're in perfect order.
Right.
They are great. I mean, they're really, they shine them. Everything is exactly. And that rifle was busted. It had a sight that didn't even work.
Wow.
It was not well taken care of. It was sort of rusty. It was the and no expert marksman would fire that type of a gun, for especially for an assassination. So the whole government story about Lee Harvey Oswald using that particular gun, it just is ridiculous. A, there's no evidence that he actually knew how to fire like a marksman. And right. B, the gun they said he used would never have been used in a situation like that. It was busted.
Right.
And this is not in dispute. The government, in the Warren hearings, the government's own forensic people said, to be quite honest, this thing is busted, and we tried to fix it with shims. We couldn't do it. So you couldn't aim it properly. Mm-hmm. Yet that thing had to shoot from a very far distance and with perfect accuracy.
Wow.
So what the remote viewing data said is that there were three teams, and each team had three people. They had a shooter, and they had an assistant to the shooter, and they had another guy who was standing back behind that, who was an overseer. So after the shots were taken, they'd all pack up, and the overseer guy would come in and make sure that there was nothing left. And one of the teams of three walked off together, and the other team of three, they all walked off in different directions.
Oh, wow.
And so that's the type of... and. That's how assassinations are done. They're done with triangulation.
Uh-huh.
And apparently there were three. The remote viewers came up with three apparent groups, but only two groups apparently took shots.
Did Daz or Dick or both of them go up the chain of command to see who ordered it?
Yes. You're going to have to watch it to see that. But they did go, and they have some pictures of people up the chain of command that are unbelievably interesting to look at.
Interesting. All right. Well, that's...
Now, again, we're saying that these are the remote viewing data. We're not saying they're totally accurate, but we're saying these are the remote viewing data.
Right.
And but by the way, I just have to say, in order to do projects like this, people have to be able to go through an enormous amount of training.
Sure.
Princess herself went through 9 months of solid before she could even begin stuff like this. And then they have to show themselves in regular work that's publicly verified.
Sure.
And to do that, what they often do when they start out is they do a project that we call here Time Cross.
Mm-hmm.
And every month, at the end of every month, we release a Time Cross News Hour, which is remote viewing for the major news events that will happen the next month.
Wow.
So we just released the Time Cross project for July. So we're waiting. So the remote viewing descriptions of the major news events that we expect to be reported in July was just released, and we're waiting through the month of July to see those events happening. We've been doing this for over a year, starting in May 2016, and we have not missed a month.
That's amazing.
So it's been very great accuracy. You have to act, and it's free. It's all up on YouTube. So if you go to farsight.org, farsight.org, that's where you get it. And Princess, why don't you tell Ted and the audience what you will be doing in 2 or 3 minutes as soon as this radio interview is over.
Okay. We've got about 2.5 minutes left, but go right ahead. This is so fascinating.
As soon as this radio interview is over, I'm actually going to video for my next Time Cross target for the month of July.
No, we're in July.
So we're in July already. Goodness, I'm late. For the month of August, I'm actually going to my Time Cross project for the month of August right after we get off of this radio interview.
Yeah, she's already done a session describing a major news event that will occur in August.
Wow.
And here we are recording it July 7th, but it will be released the end of July, and then it will happen in August. And we have not missed. And her accuracy is spectacular.
Wow.
I mean, she is like spectacular. You have to see it to believe it. I mean, for example, remember the ghost ship warehouse fire that happened in Oakland, California a while back?
Kind of, yeah. I did kind of, yeah.
It caught fire. Like 37 some odd people died in the fire. It was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Her description of it was so perfect. It was like she was there on the ground. She got the bridges. She got the organization. She got what the building looked like. She described exactly what was happening. I'm just saying that's as one. She does this every single month.
Wow.
She does it with Melinda Hall. She does it with Aziz Brown. So the point is that we do this every month. So the audience, the YouTube audience, gets to see this remote viewing work.
Amazing.
And then Mysteries Projects make sense. They say, well, if they can do this and I'm watching it happen, they're remote viewing the major news events for the next month. And in fact, the events happen exactly as they're being described.
Wow.
Then those Mysteries Projects must be something great. So that's sort of those two things. Time Cross is this project we're talking about.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, we've got about just a few seconds left now. And Courtney and Princess, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. That's farsight.org. And friends, please stay tuned to our next hour. We'll be interviewing Master Lin from Taiwan. Wonderful, man. Thank you so much for coming on today, Courtney and Princess. Really appreciate your work.